Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the dreadful voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Dreadful. Do explain.
Dreadful you are, mate. Dreadful. You're absolutely dreadful.
I've got a feeling I know what you're referring to.
Do you know what else you are?
Go on.
I'm sick to death, mate, of you blasted goalkeepers diving. Diving all around the place.
How dare you dive? Ridiculous.
Drives me insane. And don't you come to me after this and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. All right? Don't you dare.
You are referring, of course, to our friend Mr. Keane.
All of them.
In fact, all of them, because yeah, I was going to say, that last bit, was that Efanikoku, was it, from memory? We've had so many this week.
There was an added one well, because after this, you're probably going to get some sort of award. Podcast Man of the Match or something. I don't like that. Don't like that fact. Goalkeepers getting Man of the Match. Horrendous.
I did see this too. So we've got Ian Wright we're referring to here, referring to Roy Keane, referring to Efanikoku. Any other names you want to throw into the mix?
Well, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? And we've said it once, and we'll continue to say it again, that Commentary Corner was just a bit of fun that we started. We felt like we'd made our point, and then we bring it in occasionally. But it feels like things did start to get better, but now it feels like it's gone completely the other way again. And it is the preposterous nature of the stuff we're hearing that we have to bring it up.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely insane.
It does feel more and more like them versus us.
Do you know what it feels like?
Go on.
It feels like they're digging their heels in now. It feels like they've gone so far that they don't want to admit they're wrong. It feels like the Euros and Roy Hodgson. Do you remember when him and Gary Neville, ironically, decided in all their wisdom to put Harry Kane on corners and free kicks?
Yes.
And despite the whole world, not just England, the entire footballing world saying, that's ridiculous, but rather than admit they'd made a mistake and changed their mind and almost gone, okay, everyone else is right and we're wrong, they stuck by their guns. And he continued to take corners and free kicks unsuccessfully. And this is the way that it's gone now. It's like they don't want to admit that they don't really know what they're talking about. So they're like, we are just going to run with this.
We're just going to run. We're going to go even harder. Double down.
Yeah.
We're going to double down. The bit as well for me is actually in a world at the moment where you have to be so careful about everything you say. We're now at a point where it is fully acceptable for these outfield pundits to say whatever they want. Ridiculous comments over and over. Roy Keane actually did double down. He said it twice. He didn't just say dreadful once. He then came back to his point and made the point that they were dreadful. Even though, let's go through the penalties one by one. Which one? In fact, it was one, maybe, that Dean Henderson might have saved. But look, you goalkeepers listening in, how many times has that happened? When you dive for a penalty, you can't react once it's struck, if it's struck that hard. You can't move your arms quick enough. And sometimes it will creep under your body because you physically cannot get there. But yes, it doesn't look fantastic. That was possibly the only one that he might have saved out of those eight penalties or whatever it was. Eight or nine? Eight, wasn't it? Yeah. Just unbelievable. And you're right, the other comments, it's kind of, I don't mind it where they make the comment of, oh, to me, that looked like XYZ. However, I'm not a goalkeeping expert. I don't mind that because that's almost an element of understanding that, no, you're not an expert, but do you know what? I appreciate that you've got an opinion on the matter rather than, yeah, that was dreadful. Both goalkeepers were dreadful. I mean, it was a penalty shootout.
So let's call them out, shall we?
Go on.
We'll call them out one by one because rather than go on about and cover the same ground, we'll actually just look at what they said. So the Ian Wright and Roy Keane thing, like you said, Manchester United against Middlesbrough, the penalty shootout after the game, Ian Wright started it by saying, both goalkeepers had no chance in the way that they were diving or whatever around the place. Didn't look like any of the keepers were going to make a save. The goalkeepers that were diving around all over the place, kind of feel like that's the nature of the job in some respects. To which point, Roy Keane said, dreadful. They were dreadful. Yeah, they were dreadful, said Ian Wright. In AFCON, I got slightly confused with this because we've been spending a bit of time together, but in separate rooms. Yep. So we were watching the AFCON final last night. I was upstairs, you were downstairs. Now, I was listening to Efanikoku on BBC. I came down and we thought we'd watch the penalties together, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
But I think you were watching the Sky Sports feed.
Yes.
I was watching BBC. So on Sky Sports, it was Leroy Rasinha and John Salako, I think. On BBC, Efanikoku and Yaya Toure. Efanikoku reacted to a save that Gabaski, the Egyptian goalkeeper, made. We'll speak about him later. And said, I don't want goalkeepers getting in touch with me afterwards saying, you've got no idea what you're talking about. He was talking a bit technically about the save that Gabaski had made. And then it was the penalties. Leroy Rasinha and John Salako. which we watched together and could not believe the absurdities flowing from their mouths.
It was. It was when Mendy makes the save and they just couldn't wait to brush past it to then move on to the hero of the hour. The hero of the hour. By the way, and Sadio Mane, the hero of the hour, who nearly got sent off during normal time, missed a penalty during normal time, missed other chances, but then scores that crucial penalty. And what a penalty. You called it, John. That's right. You called it. He did kick it low in the corner. You called it. Really?
Oh. And Mendy just gambled.
Mendy gambled. Look, that's correctly what a goalkeeper does on penalty. Gamble. You just gamble. And look, he gambled, he made the save. But look, let's move on to Sadio Mane. Here comes the hero of the hour. Oh, my God.
And actually, that call on gambling is completely wrong when we've seen the water bottle after the game as well that Gabaski had on the penalty takers for Senegal, Mane being one of those. And also, what I don't like as well, and we spoke about this with Rob Green, a penalty save that he made from Alexis Sanchez way back when he was playing for QPR against Arsenal. And it was Sanchez's Chilean teammate, I can't remember the fella, playing for QPR. And all the story was that he told Rob Green where to go. And Rob Green was like, no, I'd studied that. I knew where I was going. Here, everyone's talking about how Salah gave Gabaski the information on Sadio Mane. He already knew. He knew where he was going.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, you're right. But again, it's almost taking credit away from and giving it to someone else. By the way, Gabaski was brilliant during this game. I know we'll talk about him in more detail shortly. But you're right. The amount of... And this would have been the same for Dean Henderson, for Joe Lumley, for whoever else has faced penalties over this weekend with it being many cup games and what have you. We do our research. We always did. You know, I made one or two saves during my time. I promise you, I did my research with the goalkeeper coach in order to give yourself the best chance when you come to that. But again, it comes back to the point. There's two things I want to say on this. One is it does concern me that they're getting criticised now for penalties because that was always our thing. Do you know what? For all the criticism a goalkeeper could get, at least you had the chance of being a hero when you saved a penalty. But even in, there's a couple of games this weekend. I think it was Josh Vickers, I think, made a save, really good penalty save in the final minute to preserve a 1-0 win, then makes another great save late on. You listen to the commentary and it's a poor penalty. Like, no, the goalkeeper's made the right decision at the right time, executed it in the last minute to win your team 3 points. Like, give him some love. That at least that used to get us some credit, but even that now is being criticised. And I did have another point, but I've forgotten what it was.
We'll finish on Yaya Toure. We didn't mention him. Of course, saying that he doesn't like it when goalkeepers get man of the match. Don't like that factor. It's not nice. It's not a good thing, Matt. Don't like it.
And again, this is where it's only going to continue to get worse until they finally bring in a goalkeeping pundit. Whether it's a Rob Green, a Paul Robinson. I can see Kasper Schmeichel. I've mentioned that many times. I think when he's done, he'll go into it. Someone that can just give a difference because it is so one-sided. And if anything, now, like you say, they're getting worse and worse and worse. They're going even further. And I go back to my initial point. In a world where you cannot say anything, you can say whatever you want about a goalkeeper if you're an outfield pundit.
You can indeed. I should say thank you to listener Sam Heafield for flagging up the AFCON stuff. That was very helpful because, what a watch, what a listen that was. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's very easy to do so. hello@goalkeepersunion.net on our phone number 07503673020. Lather, rinse, repeat. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
So what a weekend we had this week in football, in goalkeeping. We're going to start with the FA Cup and we'll start with the giant killers and the almost giant killings. We'll start at...
Go on, where?
Where do you want to start?
Should we start at Stamford Bridge?
Oh, okay. All right, fine.
We're just there. I know then I actually have to flick right down my notes because that actually was one of the later games that we went through. But let's start there because I did want to talk about Michael Cooper. Okay. And actually, not just Michael Cooper... How often, and I played these games myself, and again, I'm sure a lot of you guys can relate, when you play against a team that you should win, and as a goalkeeper, there is a sense of, it's probably a no-win situation, because you're kind of going into a game, certainly when I played for like Brentford Watford, and we play against non-league, and that happened a few times. Remember we played Boreham Wood away, I want to say it was for Brentford, pretty sure it was, but you're kind of going into the game thinking, and actually funny that it was Boreham Wood, because we're going to be talking about them as well.
I thought we might start there, but we'll start at Chelsea, mate. That's
I kind
fine.
Of feel like, no, let's start at Chelsea, but my point was going to be, I did play against Boreham Wood away for Brentford. I always remember the first half an hour, I was called into action a few times, made a couple of really good saves. We ended up going on to win the game 2-0. And it's that kind of expected result at the time, conference team against League One, I think we were at the time. And so it was kind of like the expected result. Bournemouth 0, Brentford 2. But it doesn't paint the picture, because I remember I came away from that game feeling like I had a really good game. But you don't necessarily get that much credit because, well, you're meant to win that game. You're playing against Bournemouth. So it can be quite difficult for a keeper to play in a game like this. And we've seen loads of examples this weekend. And that's why I just wanted to give Kepa some love. I thought he looked really, really good, really strong. Obviously, penalty save, again, such a crucial save at a crucial time. And just generally, we look at the Kepa that we spoke about not so long ago. And for me, it is something that it's quite difficult to express in words, because a lot of it is you look and he's got a certain aura about him. You know, he's always had attributes that have been very good. But there was just a time where you just felt like there might have been a little bit of a lack of confidence, a lack of belief, where certain goals were going in that you just thought, could he? Might have been able to have done a little bit more. Whereas now you look at him, he looks strong. He looks like he's enjoying it, looks powerful. You're getting a lot of love from his teammates, and rightly so. And he does look like a top-end Premier League keeper. So I think a lot of credit has to go to the coaching staff there. I know there's a lot of goalkeeper coaches that work closely with him. But certainly given some of the, I suppose, criticism he got in the early Lampard days, to where he is now, you know, a lot of people would have thought he'd have moved on by now, but the fact that he is still there, still fighting for that shirt, you know, Chelsea certainly, you have to say, they've got two very, very good goalkeepers.
I was thinking about this at the weekend, actually, because it was FA Cup weekend, and I know we speak about the number one and the number two quite a lot. And I mentioned to you that if you are a number two for a lower league club, for example, not even lower league club, Championship and down, and you don't get the opportunities in the league, but because of the way it works these days, you do get normally the opportunities in the cup. So for someone like Dylan Phillips yesterday, gets to play at Anfield against Liverpool, whereas Alex Smithies, who's the number one, doesn't get the opportunity. So that's quite a funny situation. And here, if you are Kepa, do you think now, actually, he's looked at it and gone, I'm probably going to get, with the FA Cup, with the EFL Cup, with selected Champions League matches, especially this season with Mendy going to AFCON, I'm going to get maybe 20 to 30 games this season. So I might as well just stay as the number two, because I'm almost a fake number two in the other way that you speak of a fake number two, where you're almost like a 1.5.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're at one of the top clubs that are involved in European competition and are likely to progress in the cup competitions, then yeah, I think being a number two, like you say, isn't being a number two. You know, if you're a number two at a League Two club, that, all right, even if they did give you FA Cup and League Cup, that might equate to three games a season. Whereas if you're a number two at a Chelsea, I would say Man United, but maybe that doesn't apply so much at the moment. But if you're, you know, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, you're right, you're going to play at least 20 games. You consider the amount of European games, providing they're true to it. And this is where you've got to give credit again to the various managers that we're speaking about as well, because that could have been a very easy one for the Cardiff manager to put Alex Smithies in, given that he's playing the league games. But this is a great example. There's so little between Alex Smithies and Dylan Phillips that naturally he wants to reward Dylan Phillips wherever he can. And this is a way in which he could do that, by giving him the cup games. I think in terms of Kepa, again, Mendy is the clear number one, but it's not like it's night and day between the one and two. So for him, you put an £80 million or whatever he is goalkeeper in for the cup games, like, absolutely he'll want to do that. So yeah, I think if you're at a top club and you are a number two goalkeeper, there's no reason you are, you know, you're not racking up 20, 25 games a season.
So you mentioned Kepa. You did start by saying you wanted to talk about Michael Cooper.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is, though, I'm afraid.
Because?
Because is it a bird? Is it a plane? No. Apparently it's the Cooper Man, according to Jonathan Pearce. I want to know if he's ever been called that. The Cooper Man.
The Cooper
Where
Man.
Did that come from?
I don't know, because I feel like he said it as if it was a real famous thing. And I've never heard of it, I'll be honest.
Great save, though, from Mason Mount. A good game. Brilliant. He was featured on Match of the Day, too. A very good goalkeeper. Lovely to see him in the interview afterwards as well, saying that, of course, he went to get Kepa's shirt and he tries to model his game on these top goalkeepers. And this is a goalkeeper who indeed could be a top goalkeeper of the future.
Yeah, he's heading in the right direction. He's building a really good CV. Plymouth, he's been their outright one for a period of time now. I know a lot of clubs are looking at him, and rightly so. This will have only increased that reputation even further. I'll be surprised if he's at Plymouth the next season. That's my gut instinct. And yeah, look, he was very good all afternoon. Lots of saves we could talk about. The one that we will talk about is the one that was highlighted a couple of times on Match of the Day. And that was one to the top right. Just when you watch it again, it struck from not that far from him, but the power, the spring, the speed up to his right-hand side and the technique in order to get the hand over the bar. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal save. I'd go as far as to say world-class. I think there are Premier League goalkeepers that don't make that save. But again, he is a beautiful shape, size, really looks like an elite goalkeeper. And yeah, certainly a very impressive display. And also to do it in a game like this, it's always one of them where, yep, he's got a great reputation and people have spoke about him quite a bit. But okay, can you go and do it at Stamford Bridge? When you're in that sort of environment, that arena, a little bit of expectation in that you know you're going to be busy, can you show just how good you are? And credit to him, he did.
Boreham Wood, should we talk about them?
Let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
The big story. Yeah, true. But what a game.
Should have started there, really.
That's all right, mate. It's okay. You mixed it up.
True.
And I like that. You brought something, a surprise, an element of surprise you've brought to the podcast.
Yes, that's what we like to do. And no, Bournemouth, what a game again. Another game we watched together. We actually spent a lot of time together recently. But a game we did watch, and I'm so happy for Boreham Wood, for, of course, Lloyd Doyley, an ex-teammate of mine who's the assistant manager, Luke Garrard, who I've had quite a lot of dealings with over the past few years. I made sure I sent them both a congratulatory message. Luke responded, Lloyd didn't.
I was going to say, have they responded yet?
Luke did. Very nice response. Lloyd, no, nothing. You know, known him since we were 10 years old, but that's Lloyd.
Small fry to him now,
this
mate.
This is it. He's forgotten about me already, but no, hopefully he will respond at some point today, I'm sure. Yeah, and you know, look, credit to Ashby Hammond. Obviously, massive game to step into. Again, we speak about Michael Cooper enhancing his reputation. No doubt he will have enhanced his also. And the double save that he made, I mean, there was several parts of his game that we could touch on that were impressive. Certainly the way he held himself, looked very confident throughout. But the double save that he did make, the second of which would have been offside, but was arguably the pick of the bunch. The first save is one of them where it's moved on him a bit, made a decent enough stop, it's hit the bar, came out. The speed at which he got up and then reacted top left-hand corner to get fingertips to tip it onto the post. Brilliant, brilliant save. And certainly the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, Bournemouth, of course, as you would expect, had more and more opportunities. Didn't work him too much after that. But again, he had to be sharp on a couple of occasions where needed. So massive well done to him. Massive well done to Boreham Wood. And I think it's fair to say they deserved it on the whole.
They did, I would say. Yeah, 100%. And not having to make too many saves, but that, right, is where the mental concentration, the mental focus, because it was like the Alamo, wasn't it? Everything but the kitchen sink. Yeah, Bournemouth.
It is, and that's the bit that I think you can, you know, as much as you can look at it in stats and say, oh, well, he only had X number of shots to take. Again, you goalkeepers listening in, you'll know how it feels. 10 minutes to go, 1-0 up. And how often does that happen? That last 10 minutes can feel like a lifetime when you're constantly talking to the back four, back five, back three in front of you in order to make sure they're alive, in order to see the danger before it actually happens. That the concentration levels are insane. And certainly when you're playing the game as big as that, you know, it's live on TV, you're 1-0 up. There's also the element of course, you want to be the hero. It's nothing nicer than making that big save towards the end and you get the adulation. But similarly, you know that, how often do we see that? A late goal goes in against you. And there's nothing worse than if you feel you might have been able to do a little bit more with it. So if anything, you have to then increase things even further. And how many goalkeepers come off after a game? And again, you guys listening in, I'm no doubt you will be able to empathize in regards to this, where sometimes you'll come off with a splitting headache. You know, I've had that so many times coming off after a game where you've concentrated so hard, you've been barking instructions the entire game. And when the final whistle goes, your head's just throbbing.
You mentioned late goals too, conceding late goals. And for poor Luke Simpson, it was just that. Kidderminster 1, West Ham 2. A goal conceded in the 90th and the 120th minute of the game. So gutted for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did. He played a really good game. Someone that actually I know personally from many years ago, and credit to him because he was at a couple of clubs when he was younger. He's moved down the levels in order to find a team that he can play regularly with and look really good, really competent throughout. Made a very good save down low to the near post, which, again, in fact, I made a note on this because it didn't quite get the love again that I wish it would have got, because it was a really sharp save. And who was it on the commentary? You probably know.
It was Dion Dublin. To be fair, he did say.
No, it was in the bit afterwards save. Then. It was in the...
Oh, yes. Sorry.
It was along the lines of, like, we've got to give credit to the goalkeeper, but what a tackle coming up. Wait for it. Here it comes. Oh, what a tackle. It was just a regular tackle. It was a brilliant save down to the near post. But yes, he did say that he would give the goalkeeper a little bit of credit. But again, this is probably me just being a bit biased, wanting the goalkeeper to get a little bit more love.
Yes, it was Danny Murphy. It was Danny Murphy, yes, because they'd focused on, I think it was Preston, wasn't it, the Kidderminster centre-back who'd had a good game. So, yeah, okay.
But we won't highlight it to him. We had plenty more earlier to highlight, so we'll let Danny Murphy off that one.
And you thought at the time, when you were watching that game, that it might be a tricky weekend for goalkeepers. This was one of the early kickoffs because of the goals scored by Kidderminster and Alphonse Areola not able to collect the cross.
No, and I actually felt sorry for him on this because I think it's an easy one to look at. And of course, you look at it and the initial reaction is, oh, Areola's got to do a bit better. You know, he's come for the cross. He hasn't got there. The ball's broke and they've scored. If you watch the replay from behind the goal, it's quite noticeable how much the ball dies in the air. So the cross is whipped in and it is like it hits a brick wall and it just drops. And again, we've all faced this where you come for the cross and suddenly it's just dying on you and you end up chasing, can get nowhere near the highest point. You're catching it in the end, almost chest level. And that's what happens here. So I actually think this is one of those situations where it looks worse than it is because you can't see wind. You can't see the conditions and how that impacts decision making. So one that no doubt he'll still be frustrated with. But by seeing this, I thought, well, this could be a really tricky weekend because it was so windy up and down the country. Some of the games where you're seeing goal kicks being taken and they're landing 30 yards short of the halfway line and vice versa, landing on the edge of the box. I just felt that it could have been an incredibly tricky weekend for goalkeepers. But actually, that being said, there wasn't all that many errors to speak of.
We'll move over to Old Trafford, shall we, and speak about Joe Lumley. Middlesbrough beating Manchester United on penalties. Now, I'm going to entitle this segment Joe's Journey. Because it felt like Joe Lumley went on his own journey during this game. I think it seemed the opening 10 minutes or so, I thought, has the occasion overawed him a bit? There was the moment right at the start where Jadon Sancho clipped the bar after he came out. The ball came over the top. Bit of a misunderstanding with his defenders. There was the goal conceded by Jadon Sancho. A couple of issues playing out from the back, I suppose. Perhaps not necessarily his fault, but then it just felt like he grew into the game. He was enjoying himself. He was smiling. Great save from Bruno Fernandes. And then the penalties. It just felt like he'd gone on his own journey throughout that game.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And it was a really interesting game when you're looking at it from his perspective, in that each of the moments, you could go into detail on each. Like the first one, as you mentioned, it was a little bit of a mix-up and the balls just broke. They end up hitting the bar. There was then the one that he'd have been a little bit frustrated about was the one that beat him from distance, which was then given offside. And the fact that it was given offside, obviously, in the end, it doesn't count. But, you know, certainly from his perspective, he may have felt like he could have impacted that situation a little bit more. But then after that, he had a couple of moments where actually I thought he did the right thing. The ball into the City midfielder wasn't a bad ball, and the City midfielder was just a little bit slow to get to it. And then all of a sudden, Fernandes has a one-on-one and people are then questioning the pass. But actually, I thought the pass was okay. So, but then, as you said, as the game then continued to move on, he did look stronger and stronger, and he did look like he was really relishing playing at Old Trafford. And as much as, you know, Roy Keane has given some stick to the goalkeeper for the penalties, the truth is that Joe Lumley faced 9 penalties and they only scored 7. Now, I know people listening will probably laugh at that and say, well, they missed 2. Yeah, of course they did. But of course, if Joe Lumley isn't there, then you score all 9. Of course, you just roll them down the middle because there's no goalkeeper there. But the moment you have a goalkeeper there of Joe's size, stature, moving around all over the goal line, you are then essentially saying to the player taking it, you're going to have to put this right in the corner if you want to beat me. So, and again, I'll be interested in your opinion on this, but you know what I'm going with this? I feel like if you then had a different goalkeeper, let's say you had a goalkeeper that wasn't necessarily as active as Joe Lumley in goal, does that change Cristiano Ronaldo's mindset as he's stepping up for that first penalty?
I mean, it's Cristiano Ronaldo.
I'm not sure if any goalkeeper can change his mindset. If you're stood in goal for that first penalty, do you think Cristiano still puts it wide?
No, of course not.
There you go. That's my point. So then I'm always going to credit the goalkeeper when they don't score, because I think that if someone misses the goal, I know you're smiling, but I'm sticking with this. If someone misses...
I'm picturing me in goal at Old Trafford facing a Cristiano Ronaldo penalty, which, of course, you have done.
I have done, and he did score. So, yeah, there you go. That probably proves my point.
I should have turned that back on you.
You should have, yeah, you should have. That probably proves my point. But this is what I'm saying is I just think that I personally, and maybe I'm taking things a bit far now, but again, I'm sticking with this. I think if a player misses, the goalkeeper should get credit because there is an impact that the goalkeeper will have on the taker in regards to what they end up doing. So, yeah, Joe Lumley faced 9 penalties, only 7 scored.
Sure, I'm with you on this. I guess some people might counteract that argument by saying he didn't save any. What I did think was funny was the celebrations afterwards, because after Elanga missed that penalty, blew it over the bar, the natural thing for the players is to run to the goalkeeper, but it felt like it wasn't as emphatic as it normally would be, because he didn't actually save the winning penalty and hadn't saved any of the penalties. So I felt like he relished that moment, but not too much, because he was aware as well that he hadn't saved the penalty. The one thing that I also wanted to mention, which wasn't really flagged on the commentary, was just his reading of the game, his positioning, his advanced positioning, because there were plenty of times when balls were whipped in, were zipped in, through balls curled in, and he was always there to cut out that passage of play.
Yeah, he was. He's, you know, we talk a lot about front-footed goalkeepers, goalkeepers reading the game well, and certainly that was him. You're right. And as the game went on, more and more, certain dangerous situations that never came to be because of the way in which he was playing. And I guess it goes back to your initial comment, Joe's journey, because it was. And that's where I was thinking this after the game, like, if you were going to give him a rating out of 10, then what does he get? Because you could look at a couple of moments and say, oh, Joe, I wish you'd have done this in that particular moment. But there was so much to like about this performance. I still think he gets a 7 or 8.
Okay, let's mop up the rest of the FA Cup action. Stephen Bender, 2 great stops for Peterborough. I thought the clincher for Peterborough, scored by Ricky Jade Jones, David Marshall, maybe. Not sure whether he could have possibly done better with that one. Willy Caballero, a double stop and a brilliant celebration after the goal was disallowed for Coventry. Southampton beating them. Robert Sanchez caught playing out from the back again. That resulted in the opener for Spurs. And Hugo Lloris, just another couple of decent stops from him. Just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, just to touch on a few of those moments. As you mentioned, Stephen Bender, a couple of brilliant saves, certainly up to his right-hand side. And again, so much is spoke about Stephen Bender, just how good he is, but of course not quite fitting the style of play that Swansea play. But certainly what we're seeing so far has been very impressive for Peterborough. It was an interesting one, David Marshall won. You just wondered, it's hard to see from the camera angle you're given as to whether maybe he just slightly overcovered. And it's so difficult to see because you just can't tell from that angle, because it just felt like it was a bit of an angle. And even his reaction suggested to me that maybe he thought he might have been able to impact the situation a little bit more. Caballero, look, credit to him. You know, we've mentioned his age far too much on this podcast, but really sharp save down to his right, which then resulted in a double save. Did well on the one-on-one as well. Like you said, love the celebration as soon as that one goes in and he celebrates like it's a goal. Love that. Sanchez was an interesting one, and it wasn't necessarily him. He passed out fine. In fact, the one before, he had a bit of a miss kick, then he's passed out fine, and then it was actually then the defender did the exact same thing that, yeah, Robert said. Really odd. And then that obviously did lead to the goal. And finally, as you mentioned, Lloris, yeah, again, for me, not getting enough credit. That when that takes a deflection, most goalkeepers are gone by that point. So to have the ability to change direction as you've already gone, to get back to the left to make the save he did, I thought was exceptional. And then on the one-on-one, in fact, there was another one we watched together, which was the Forest-Leicester game. We commented on Danny Ward when he was beaten on the angle and he put it through his legs. And actually, it was interesting watching Lloris in the one-on-one in that he took up such a tight position, very low, so tight. And in the end, Morpé tries to chip it over him, basically, and very poorly. But again, credit to Lloris, took up a really good position, made it difficult to beat. And in the end, Morpé's decision was the incorrect one because he didn't go early, didn't guess, and makes a good save.
Forest Leicester, actually, we should mention that. You said Danny Ward and, of course, Brees Samba. They won Nottingham Forest convincingly against Leicester. Great finish from Kelechi Iheanacho. Let's not take anything away from that. But Samba, just a bit too advanced. Although, we should place blame on the bird here, who caused all kinds of disarray by flying up right as the ball was about to be taken by Samba.
Yeah, bird that was just on the pitch, waits for that moment. And so I'm personally blaming the bird. I think that we spoke earlier about the conditions, whether the ball got held up a bit. I'm not sure. I mean, it's one of them where, again, we're seeing so many goalkeepers now, the way in which the managers want them to play, to be so advanced, to try and cut things out of source. Yeah, look, he's a step or two away from getting to this first or 50-50 tackle, and then we're talking about it being brilliant goalkeeping. Unfortunately, the moment you do just misjudge it in the way that you do, or the way that he did, it was then to skip round him, and it's an excellent finish. You know, for example, there was the example in the Liverpool game, for those that saw that, where Kelleher came steaming out and got a booking, where he ended up fouling the player, but the Cardiff manager, Steve Morrison, made the point that had his attacker got to the ball first, which he could have, he did get there before Kelleher, we would have seen a very similar outcome, I'm sure, as to what we've seen in the Forest-Leicester game. So it's a great example of where, I guess, two goalkeepers have done pretty much identical things in Kelleher and Samba. Unfortunately for Samba, he got the ultimate punishment.
So a red or not a red for Kelleher?
It's tough, isn't it? Because I think that if the player gets onto the ball thereafter, he should score. You know, 30 yards out, yes, but there's an open goal. So I think for that, the dangerous play one's always an interesting one. And that, yes, when you look at the way in which he connects, but that's because he is going for the ball. He thinks he's going to get the ball and he misses it. So is it dangerous play? I guess it is. You know, I'm going to give the excuse that it's a goalkeeper making a tackle. It's not something that a goalkeeper practices, and he's doing it with no intent. So I was quite happy to see the fact that it was a booking. But yeah, my initial thought was the fact that if he does get onto the ball, he probably scores. And the fact that he has gone in with his studs up in the way that he has, it wouldn't have surprised me if it was a red.
Okay. Just to also say that although it was a heavy defeat for Brentford, David Raya, good to see him back.
It was. And one of the goals I think he'd have been a little bit frustrated by where he's come out. But I think this is where, look, without downplaying the FA Cup, I think for David Raya, it's nice for him to get a game in before we go back to league fixtures. And I just felt with this one, this is a perfect example of what can often happen if you haven't played a game for several months. Because it is that. It's your decision making. It's knowing when to come, the positions you're taking up in any given moment. And I just felt with this, he was obviously ever so slightly too late. Probably didn't approach the ball at quite the right angle and made it a little bit easier for the attacking player to score past him. But again, without downplaying the FA Cup, he'd rather do that in a game such as this in order to then be fully match sharp and the David Raya we saw before when we come back to league action.
It is the EFL overview. We'll start in the Championship. Just one game really to cover here. Hull v Preston, Dan Everson and Matty Ingram. Ingram in, of course, because Nathan Baxter was out ill. But Everson with a few brilliant stops in this one yet again.
Yeah, and there was, and I heard it on the, was it Soccer Saturday? I think it was, I heard it, where they described it as a Schmeichel-esque save, which it is now. That's the branding, right? It's the Schmeichel star. And it was, but do you know what I'd say about this particular save? You made a really sharp one to his right before this, which we'll mention. But in regards to the Schmeichel star, I would say this is the perfect play for this situation. And it's not necessarily taught even now in that if it is a header from, 4 yards? And it's going to be a bullet header. You can see they're coming in and they're going to absolutely nail the header. If you think about it logically, all you're going to try and do is make yourself the shape that you pull with your body. You want it to be as big as it can possibly be at that given moment. You want to cover where the likelihood is that the ball is going to end up. So if you pause it the moment this ball's headed, he's already gone into the star, but it's a real low star. Like he's got his feet and arms so wide, so low, and he has effectively put his body into a position where he's predicting where the header's going to go. And he was bang on. You know, he's made his body as firm as he possibly could. So if it does hit him, it's going to go off into hopefully a safe area. So for me, it's the perfect play at the perfect time. And you do wonder whether there are goalkeeper coaches that may look to teach this technique. Because I think as much as you might look at it and from a textbook point of view and say at that point, you get as close to your line, give yourself as much reaction time as possible and get a nice set position. The truth is when it's a header from 4 yards, you're just not going to have the time in order to make the reaction and make the save.
There's a lot of handball chat around this one as well, isn't there? Danish, yeah. Of course. I think that he even had to choose between the two, handball or football. Plump for football. I'd be interested to speak to a lot of Danish goalkeepers whether they had the opportunity to choose between handball and football and whether some go, I want to do handball instead of football. Interesting. What would you think?
I mean, look, I think we know what the answer would be.
Of course, most. You do football. Yeah, hands down.
Yeah. Hands down. Okay. Handball.
On to League One.
Let's do it.
Ron Hoffman with a double save and Jonathan Mitchell as well with a good save as well from Ross Stewart. Yes. Surprise victory for Doncaster here.
Let me talk about this one because actually look, at the time that we'll often dig out commentators for not being overly positive about a goal, this for me was actually the opposite example where they spoke about Hoffman having excelling on this day. And I'm watching it thinking, if I'm Hoffman, I'm probably a little bit frustrated with my performance, because certainly the goal that beats him to his left doesn't quite get himself set, doesn't attack the ball, and it beats him. And you could sense that he would have been annoyed with the fact that this did beat him. And then the double save, which was described, and look, credit to the commentator. I love the fact that he's being so positive about goalkeepers, you know, that essentially kept them in the game with a phenomenal double save. I think he might have been a bit frustrated he wasn't able to hold the first one. And you could see he didn't really celebrate or wasn't overly delighted about making the save. So I think he felt, it's almost that we've all been there, where you make the save and then thankfully you make the second save, and it's more relief than a celebration because you feel like you should have done better with the first.
Elsewhere, James Trafford finally conceding a goal in his fifth Bolton outing. Did save a penalty before that from Cole Stockton. They drew one apiece there. Bundles at the end of that one, by the way. Lots of bundles in the Football League this weekend. Bailey Peacock-Farrell up to the test at Burton. They won 2-0 Sheffield Wednesday. And you mentioned him earlier, Josh Vickers saving a Harry Pell penalty amid quite remarkable scenes at Rotherham. I've not seen anything like that, I don't think. They beat Accrington 1-0. And what I don't like about this, and it's great that a goalkeeper has saved a penalty, and you mentioned it earlier, he should have been given more credit, but that fan who came on and barged into Harry Pell ultimately got in his head.
Yeah.
And Pell, listen, yes, it was a brilliant save, but it still wasn't the best penalty. And you'd imagine part of that is because of what happened before.
Yeah, in a way, it's like the outcome. And certainly when the fan did that, I like the fact that it was a Rotherham player that actually stopped him in the end, which, yeah, it's kind of annoying that that action has ended up yielding a positive outcome somehow. But yeah, I want to bring it back to Vickers, because I just think, as I say, in that moment, how often do you get an opportunity 1-0 up and you face a penalty in the last minute? You know, probably happens 2-3 times in your career. And then how often do you actually make the save? And again, for a lot of goalkeepers, it might be never. So to have a moment like that and to execute it in the way that he did, and then to make the save after that as well with his feet, yeah, crazy last few minutes of football. But when that final whistle goes, what a high that must be to know that your contributions towards the end of a game like that was so, so important. So no, delighted for him, and certainly for them when they're, you know, very much in the automatic promotion hunt, this could end up being a vital 3 points.
And finally, in League Two, Carl Rushworth. A bit more of the good, the bad and the ugly from him, I think, for Walsall. They lost at home to Northampton. Liam Roberts against his former club. Another clean sheet for him. Stevenage with a late equaliser at Crawley. Scott Cuthbert scored it, but Christy Pym, not just a punt, an arrowed diag to help set up the goal. And Sam Hornby, a debut clean sheet for Colchester. They won away at Leyton Orient.
Yeah, big credit to Sam Hornby, and certainly Colchester have turned their fortunes around, it's fair to say, under new manager Wayne Brown. So big well done to them. And yeah, a few that you mentioned there. Certainly to mention Liam Roberts, brilliant save in this one down low to his left, and really making even more of a name for himself. You know, that we knew he was a solid, very reliable goalkeeper previously at Walsall, but I think it's fair to say that he's taken things to another level at Northampton. And yeah, Cole Rushworth, it's another, I mean, we spoke about him a lot, I feel like, on this pod, because he certainly knows how to keep the ball out of the net. It was a little bit scrappy. That was the note that I put down, where there was one or two. And it was a bit of a tricky one, because I think it did bounce up a bit to him, the one that came to his left, and he wasn't able to hold. But again, showing real tenacity, bravery, just constantly getting himself involved in any way he can in order to keep the ball out of the net.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
So we are, of course, 1 week on from transfer deadline day, where you were zipping off last week. There were a few moves on the day and a couple more since. They are Billy Crellin has gone from Fleetwood to Everton. That's a permanent deal, undisclosed. Simon Sluger from Luton to Ludogorets, also undisclosed. Kieran O'Hara from Burton to Fleetwood, that's on a free. Matty Kovar from Manchester United to Burton, that's a loan deal. Nicholas Bailo-Kapic from Huddersfield to Hartlepool, that's a loan deal. Sam Hornby, Bradford to Colchester, also a loan. Jamal Blackman, unattached, to Huddersfield. Jed Steer from Aston Villa to Luton, that's a loan. Nick Hayes from Hemel Hempstead to Ipswich on a free. Freddie Woodman, he's gone on loan to Bournemouth from Newcastle. And Adam Smith, who was previously unattached, has gone in at Morecambe.
You you mentioned a few there that were all connected, and it was interesting, like, you know, the amount you've named there that happened on deadline day. It's always so funny. There's probably as many on deadline day as there was in the previous month, or certainly not, you know, not far off. But there was that interesting where it was, so you mentioned Morecambe, Fleetwood, who else was there involved? But there was several involved.
Burton,
that's it. So as soon as Burton then were potentially looking to move O'Hara on, then you had the Billy Crell into Everton, which, look, credit to Billy Crell, great move. Obviously, the a big link being Dave Lucas, who's worked with Billy Crell so much during his youth, knows just how good he is and has managed to bring him into Everton. So, of course, you've then got the space at Fleetwood. O'Hara to Fleetwood then became a good choice. And now, of course, Burton now need their number two, so they go for Kovar. Really interested in that one because he's one that, of course, went to Swindon, had a bit of a tough time at Swindon, it's fair to say, but certainly everyone I've spoken to has always mentioned just how good he could be. So potentially this could give him an opportunity there.
His deal was actually extended at United, wasn't it? So he's been extended for another year with an option.
Right, okay. Yeah, which says a lot, you know, because look, United, it's one of them where they're happy to move, as a lot of the big clubs are, they are happy to move you on if they don't feel that you have a future there. But I think with someone like him, from what I've heard, there is a goalkeeper there, like a top goalkeeper there. So who knows, maybe this will be the opportunity for him to really kick on and show what he's about. Couple of other interesting ones, Nick Hayes, of course, returning to Ipswich. He's left Ipswich as a younger goalkeeper, went to Norwich, went to Salford, went to Hemel, now back to Ipswich. And lastly, just to mention Jed Steer, it's been tough for him at Villa. Of course, Martinez has been so consistent over the past 18 months or so. And with them bringing in Olsen, of course, that pushes him down to third choice. And Jed Steer, who's had promotion with Villa, playing in the playoff final, of course. So naturally, he's going to want to play regular football. And with Sluger moving on to Ludogorets, this in theory will give him the perfect chance to rack up some games.
We spoke about it briefly at the top. AFCON, the winners last night, Senegal beating Egypt, of course, on penalties. Just a few bits of admin on this one. Edouard Mendy named goalkeeper of the tournament. We spoke about Gabaski. He was man of the match on the day, but seeing him collect that award was just horrible because he was in tears. He was absolute emotional tatters. 5 penalty saves in the tournament as a whole. And statistically, I was looking at this. So 52 games, I think, in total at AFCON, 40 clean sheets,
wow,
which is quite remarkable. And of the 21 penalties taken, 10 not converted.
Wow, that's phenomenal figures. So wait, 52?
52 games,
yeah.
40 clean wow. sheets.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, really is. Well, look, no, huge credit to him. And I'll be opening that. I didn't know too much about him before this tournament, but what I've seen, I've been really impressed by. And as you say, it was, as he's getting that award at the end, it was, yeah, very bittersweet, I think it's fair to say. He was obviously devastated because not a lot more he could have done. And that's, again, life of a goalkeeper. How many times do we say that? There's only so much a goalkeeper can do. You know, he's played a phenomenal game, making a penalty save in normal time. Brilliant save, full stretch to his left as well towards the end of the game. Then saves a penalty in the shootout, and yet you still come out on the losing side. And that kind of encapsulates a goalkeeper's life for me. And but credit to him, you know, we talk a lot about controlling the controllables, and certainly, yeah, there's nothing more he could have done. So he can certainly hold his head up high and take a lot of positives from this tournament. But unfortunately for him, won't take home a winner's medal. Whereas, look, Mendy, it just gets better and better. It's, you know, phenomenal after obviously what he's achieved already at Chelsea, and people talk about his story so often, and rightly so. I think one day it'll make a very, very good film, or at least an incredible documentary, just an unbelievable rise to where he is now, and to claim another major, major award, and again, put in such a solid performance, all you can do is give him credit.
We should mention David De Gea as well, Premier League Player of the Month for January. The first goalkeeper to win the award in 6 years. I'm guessing you may have read this already, so you know the answer as to who the last goalkeeper was.
I'm going to have a guess. I'm going to go with Fraser Forster.
You joke. Yes, of course, it was Fraser Forster, February 2016. But 22 saves across his 4 games for United, David De Gea.
Yeah, look, you know, we've said it many times, and I'm so happy that we're talking about him again in this light, because we've said it so often, he's had a tough couple of years, and this for me is just another marker as to where David De Gea is. Look, hopefully he continues this form, and he's going to need to if United are going to want to finish in the top 4 this season from what we can see.
Okay, good podcast, good chat. We'll finish with a bit of fun and one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
So I don't think you've seen this, no. So I'm going to show it to you live because it's quite funny. Now, this does... this involves Moroccan goalkeeper Mehdi Ouaya. Right? He plays for Rapid Oued Zem, I believe. They were playing against Hassania Agadir.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll describe the action. Oh, bad pass back, taking a touch. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, my word. So, the only way I can describe it is that the ball's been passed back to him. He's gone to take a touch. The touch's gone behind him, so he's tried to volley it clear, and he's just volleyed it into the roof of the net. I can't figure out what's happened. What's happened? It's just a horrible moment. It's a terrible back pass, it has to be said. He's gone to take a touch, which has gone in the air behind him towards his own goal, but he's not under significant pressure at that point. And I think he just tried to volley it over the bar.
Brilliant.
But hasn't quite connected with it. It's just gone. And that's a real game.
Oh, that's a real game.
That's a real game.
That's not FIFA. Wow. It looks like a FIFA glitch, but no, that is real human beings.
I mean, that is, if only Danny Baker's own goals and gaffes were still a thing, because that is the first clip that's being shown. That's incredible.
I'm sure many of the listeners have already seen it. It's got millions of views. If we had a Twitter, we would have put it on there, but we're getting possibly closer.
Ooh,
so we had a response. We've had a response. Okay. So we finally made some inroads.
Excellent. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. One last goalkeeper to mention, by the way. Juan Musso of Argentina and Atalanta accidentally pictured himself in the buff on social media.
No.
Reminded me of something that you might do, to be fair.
So go on.
So he'd got home and his girlfriend or wife, whatever it may be, had left a lovely surprise for him. Some sort of balloons and all of that. So he took a picture of it and put it out on social media saying, oh, look what my girlfriend did. This is lovely. Tagged her in it. Love you. Yada, yada, yada. But he took a picture of it while he was naked and forgot that there was a mirror on the other side of the room.
Oh, no.
So his meat and two veg was there for the world to see.
Oh, no. Oh, that's... Are you sure he didn't mean it? It wasn't one of those accidental...
Well, hey, who knows?
I mean, very clever.
Very clever.
Very clever.
Ever done that? Anything like that?
No, nothing like that, unfortunately. No. Not that I can think of. But it's given me ideas.
Richard, this has been a delightful podcast. Thank you very much.
No, Matthew, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.